It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this second day of May, 2024. This is The Horn, headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, mad-tap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room, the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between and the great globe round. And, of course, whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. But if you are listening live, feel free to jump into the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany, where you'll be greeted by the early arrivers Anatole and Ralphs and Ron, Squeaky and Theo. And, me. Yes. Everybody will be glad to see you come by if you so choose to do. And, of course, if you're a podcast listener, pretty please be so kind as to like each episode of the podcast. Be subscribed on a couple of platforms in case, like, Apple Podcast drops the ball like they did during most of March and doesn't pick up the feed. That way you'll know there's a program. Of course, I post the link to the show every night, the Podbean link, on both Facebook and on what used to be known as Twitter. And the best place to make sure you're getting the program, I know a lot of people use things like Apple Podcasts, Podcast Republic, Odyssey, etc. But the best place to make sure that you get the program is to just go directly to headon.live, where you can get the podcast, or you can access the 24/7 rerun stream, or you can catch the live program in the aforementioned 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday time slot. Hi, I'm Robin. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and now just a little program aside, not even really a note. Now that I know that he got the program out yesterday, I can tell you that I spent the better part of night before last and yesterday helping my dear friend Mike Malloy get his new audio interface rig set up and working copacetically. And to this very minute, we still have no idea why his Roadcaster, he had the same unit that I have, the same model. Why it just died? I mean, it's kind of like the pathetic quality of Mr. Bojangles, in which who was it? The band? Was it the band? Saying it died. He talking about Mr. Bojangles' dog. It up and died. Oh, that's what happened to Malloy's Roadcaster. And so hopefully, and he's got a new unit. There's a new Roadcaster out. I confess, I have the flop sweats for it. It's the Rodecaster Pro 2, we had the Rodecaster Pro. And, oh, this thing does everything but your dishes. And there's even some reverb built into it. Yeah, I know. Maybe one of these days we'll get back to the voice of the goddess. The reverb was so fun all those years ago. It really, really was. But I know Mike had a show last night, and he'll have a show again tonight, 9 p.m. over on Progressive Voices. On, of course, TuneIn. That's a free product placement for our friends at Progressive Voices. But that's why I was practically brain dead by the time airtime rolled around, and I didn't want to say anything until I knew that Mike had made it to air in his regular time slot. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So we say thank you ever so kindly to our second day of the month PayPal subscribers and a la carte contributors. That means thank you. Cecilia, who jumped in yesterday. Apart from that, this comes as a bit of a surprise. I didn't realize it, but we don't have any subscribers on the second day of the month. Zero, zilch, zip, nada, niente. So we could use some new subscribers. Well, we need more subscribers, not new subscribers. I love the subscribers that we have. You all are a big part of keeping the plates spinning on all the sticks. But I hate to have vacant days in the calendar. So if someone would like to be a new subscriber, if you've never chipped in to help keep things going, you know, if you subscribe at $10, well, you are definitely setting yourself back. Not quite the price of a half a pack of Wrigley's chewing gum for every program. Yeah, not quite 50 cents for every program. And that's when you consider that the price of a song over at Amazon Music or iTunes is $1.30 for something that lasts, that might be a minute and 57 seconds long or 3 minutes and 23 seconds long, what have you. That's a damn bargain. And of course, you can listen to it over and over and over, 3 hours every Monday through Friday for the most part. Yeah, $10 subscription really is the biggest, this program really is the biggest bargain in progressive media. That's how I feel about it. So maybe you think about that, especially if you're new to the program. And if you're new to the program, hey, welcome. Look forward to hearing from you. Now, that having been said, Emilio says, reverb? Ralph's, thank you. Thank you, dear friend. Ralph's just jumped in and made sure that we've got a subscriber on May the 2nd. Thank you, Ralph's. That's so kind of you. And, by the way, fundraising goal. That stands at $600, well, now $590, to get even here with the second day of May. Basically, everything we did was to knock out the deficit left over from April, the cruelest month. And so if we can raise $590 this evening, it would be a real blessing, A. B, I can
get after continue to get after bills that I wasn't able to get after because of the deficit we ended April in, and make sure that we have a full broadcast month in May. So, you know, think about it. An anonymous friend says we need higher tiers on Patreon. I tried to do that at one point and just didn't have any luck with the way the editing the interface. But, yeah, I probably do need to go in and tidy things up. But we'll see. We'll see. For this Thorn in the Side Thursday, I wanted to go back to a note that I received yesterday after the program from our dear friend Dr. Allen, and Dr. Allen is in Waco. It's the only part of Texas I've really ever seen, Waco and the ride down to Austin. Dr. Allen says, I tried to write you a couple of days ago, but I think the message was lost. I hate that, and it was incomplete. I listen as much as I can, and I always learn much from your monologue about the law, history, and obscure news stories. I thank you deeply for what you do. I can't listen live, but I have a couple of comments from recent shows. These are comments and in no way criticisms. That's so kind of you, Alan. Thank you. One, I agree that the gnome murder of the puppy is savage, senseless, but as a vegan, I adopt this diet because of the climate crisis for health reasons and to avoid animal cruelty. We all despise killing of pets, but most other animals feel pain, have relationships, and don't want to die, e.g. pigs are wonderful pets to some people, but we slaughter them and eat their bodies. Chicken are packed into tiny spaces and suffer their entire lives. Cows are killed by a metallic block slamming into and traumatizing their brains. And the good news is there are fabulous meat substitutes these days. Two, I notice you seem to watch Morning Joe each day. You have a stronger stomach than I. You'd probably like to learn how the other side's thinking, but I would like to suggest Democracy Now! To you. It's a one-hour independent news with a progressive slant, but very professional. While Joe is denigrating the college camps supporting the Palestinians, Democracy Now! Is interviewing students who take part. I like Democracy Now! I like Amy Goodman. I've even been on her show in the past. God, I think that was like, what, 2011 maybe? 2009, somewhere in there. Talking about mountaintop removal. Because I was then and still remain the mansion whisperer. Won't have anything to whisper about after January of this year. Whatever shall I find to do for fun? I don't think that I have the ability to watch Democracy Now! It's not on. I don't think it's on my streaming service. Three. You mentioned that the Vietnam-era students had a responsibility, and yes, we protested the senseless war, but I think later generations also do have a task. During these times, we protested Iraq, which seemed like Vietnam 2.0. I did that, too. And now have activism focused on our existential threat of the climate crisis. Absolutely. In fact, I've got a really loopy story of Senator Foghorn Leghorn, Senator Jubilation T. Cornpone, you know, John Kennedy of Louisiana Stan, being a complete absolute dipshit during a Senate hearing recently. We'll get to that in a second. I agree that the climate crisis is an existential threat, Alan. I sincerely do. I think you know that. You know, I've participated in the struggle against mountaintop removal, and to this day, every program contains a mention and an exhortation to please visit crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch, and learn about and even support true grassroots activism regarding mountaintop removal coal extraction, because and I coined this phrase years and years ago. Many have used it since. Appalachia, as far as the United States is concerned, Appalachia is literally the cradle of the climate crisis. And so from cradle to end point, there is no part of the coal extraction process that isn't devastating to the ability of Earth to remain hospitable to human life. And in the final analysis, and this was a big change that, well, Cold River Mountain Watch, and I was involved in it, fostered toward the end of the first decade of this century. We went from talking about mountaintop removal and opposing it on aesthetic and esoteric grounds to talking about what an existential threat it presents, not just to the people in Appalachia, but to everywhere that that godforsaken coal was burned. From the very beginning, when the blasts take place on a denuded, violated mountain, where every living thing is scoured from it, and drills go hundreds of feet into the ground to pack the holes with ammonium nitrate and fuel oil, way back when people still remembered who Timothy McVeigh was, we would point out that that's the same deadly mix that Timothy McVeigh used to blow up the Murrah Federal Building. Well, from that moment forward, every step of the process is horrifying for the climate, whether we're burning coal for the, as Kurt Vonnegut said in 1972, and I think Breakfast of Champions, West Virginia had, in a century of time, West Virginia had destroyed itself for heat. Those were Vonnegut's words. There's no part of the coal extraction process that is clean, no matter how many ads the West Virginia Coal Association buys touting clean carbon neutral coal. And so, in fact, that work continues. But it also reminds me of something I heard in Las Vegas, my one trip there so many years ago. We went to Netroots Nation in Vegas. Where I heard two of the superstars of the climate struggle against fossil fuels, namely Majora Carter and, what is his name? He's the head of Sierra Club now, declare that, unfortunately, people would never go into the streets and build a civil rights struggle on a level of the civil rights struggle of the 60s over the climate. It was disheartening, to say the least. But the bottom line is, they were probably right. They were. And their correctness has been borne out. But it was intensely frustrating for us, having known that so many people had risked arrest to bring attention to the portion of the climate crisis that is headquartered and ground zero in West Virginia. And I thought about that when I read Dr. Allen's note last night. Because now we do have a level of unrest on college campuses that approaches approaches the Vietnam War protests of the 60s. So thanks for the note, Dr. Allen. Thank you very kindly. It's always good to hear from you. Thank you, George, out in Coarse Gold. We have another new $10 a month subscriber for the second day of May. Much appreciated. And so now we're down to $580 to get caught up here at the second day of May. No, Flavio, I'm not kidding. Flavio says, you're kidding. You don't need a streaming service to listen to Democracy Now. Okay. They stream on their website, as Randy Radar says, there's free speech TV app for your Apple TV. It's fledgling. There's also a Democracy Now! App for your iPhone, which works as well. Free speech TV app for the iPhone. Okay. Well, it's worth knowing. And George in Coarse Gold also pointing out freespeechtv.org. Thanks, y'all. Appreciate it. And thank you, Kim. Kim in New York. Jumping in, taking us down to 570. So we're getting started. $570 to go. Thank you, Kim. Thank you so very kindly. It's so great to hear from you. Reverb asked Amelia and sends me a, yep, there it is, and that's it. Now you know what the Rodecaster Pro 2 integrated audio production studio looks like. I'll run down to the basement and run off a few Benjamins, and maybe we'll put one in line here. The Mansion Whisperer, Emilio says, I really like this mansion. Why am I visiting Katie Britt's kitchen? I miss my Gulf Stream. I miss my Gulf Stream reminds me of that wonderful Talking Heads song called Nothing But Flowers. All about the... And it's a very tongue-in-cheek approach to the whole back-to-nature sort of movement. David Byrne singing and as the protagonist of the song, saying, "If this is paradise, I wish I had a lawnmower," and then wailing. There was a factory, now it's all covered in flowers. This was a parking lot, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And at the end, I can't get used to this lifestyle. Oh dear, now I'm going to have to listen to it after the program just to get myself un-earwormed. I love this song. Yeah, I think everybody does watch on their phone or their tablet, Flavio. Flavio says, you can watch Democracy Now! On a laptop or a computer, no app necessary, just a browser. Yeah, but I'm not going to come back here into the studio and sit back here when I can be comfortable in my bedroom watching on the tablet. I think most people do watch via apps now. Henry, thank you very kindly. Henry just took us down to $520 to go. That's so kind, Henry. Thank you. You're right, Ralph. Maybe you should announce any days that you don't have subscriptions. Well, I try to point out during the show when those pop up, and unfortunately, there's two or three of them. There was a time when we did not have a single date on the calendar that didn't have at least a subscriber. But inflation has been hard. And, of course, the reality is that people come and go from the community. I'm sure some people are absolutely disgusted with the fact that I won't get in line with Israel's slaughter of Gaza. But here we are, and I don't pull my punches here. I've seen, for instance, people saying, like the Palestinians want to throw the transes off of buildings. I'm pretty sure that little 7-month-old premature, not 7-month-old, 5-day-old, 7 months, 2 months premature baby girl wasn't wanting to throw any LGBTQ people off of any buildings. It's kind of how I feel. It compares to how I feel about people saying that they were assigned this or that at birth. Really object to that phrase, assigned at birth. I don't know about anybody else, but the day I was born, I can tell you I was really tired, probably really hungry, couldn't see much of anything, had just endured a hellacious process, especially given the fact that I was born breech and face up. Really wasn't supposed to be here. I'm just happy to be here, lucky to be here. And so I don't remember any assignments that any doctors may have given me on that day in 1963. I since, by looking at the documentation, was able to determine that they assumed that I was male. But as anybody who has ever been through any sort of organized sports or anything of an authoritarian nature knows, well, when you assume, you make an ass out of you and me. And so, like many people, about 1% of the population of the country, they just took a look between our legs and assumed that whatever was there meant whatever we were in terms of gender. Only we weren't. So much for assumptions. A hell of a thing to assume. Oh, look, baby's got blue eyes. Huh. I'm going to assume that baby's going to be a Hall of Fame left-handed pitcher. I'm going to assume, based on that baby having brown eyes, that baby is going to be a world-renowned sculptor. See how it works? It's really dumb. Thank you. Thank you, Cynthia, out in the Bay Area. I won't get behind the genocide either. Thank you. And now we are down to $495. Great to hear from you, Cynthia. By the way, I was talking with Annette the other night, and I know what one of my next sous vide projects is going to be. It may be a little complicated, but I'm going to try to sous vide some ribs. I'll get them and I'll prep them and I'll pull that membrane off of the back of the slab and dry rub them. They're ribs. Please, you people. I'll dry rub them, let them sit in the refrigerator in the rub for a day or so, and then make sure they're nice and dry, and then vacuum seal them and sous vide them before I put them on the smoker. That'll cut down the and so basically we'll just be smoking the ribs briefly, and I bet they will be fan-damn-tastic. I will, of course, as ever, report the results. Yes, climate change in older adults. Kim said my donation is supposed to be monthly. Can you confirm that? It absolutely is. It's a new. You know, we have three subscribers on the second day of the month now, and that's I'm so grateful for that. Also, says Kim, this afternoon I attended the National Council on Aging's webinar on the effect of climate change on older adults. It was quite interesting and, of course, sobering. And they had some informative slides, which I've attached in case you're interested. Yes, let me take a quick peep here. Unique impacts on aging population of climate change, the neglected generation. Because generally speaking, and I'm sure Kim would agree, when we talk about climate change, we tend to talk about, Generation Alpha. You know, those are the under 20s, anywhere from newborn to under 20. Because those are, you know, this is 2024, so there's a reasonable chance that Generation Alpha will, or at least its youngest members, will be kicking around in the year 2100, which is a sobering thought, especially when we consider what's according to the report, the reporting and the science, what's coming toward us at breakneck speed in 2029, you know, too fucking late. But it's here now. Climate change is happening here and now. I saw a report earlier today saying that the 2024 hurricane season is going to be, and this is a complex meteorological term, a booger. I'm going to see if I can find that story again. Well, suffice to say that, this year's hurricane system is predicted by various meteorological sources to be, again, I talked with her about it. A horror. We don't know where. Anywhere along the Gulf Coast is a likely target. The Atlantic Coast, anywhere from Florida to Maine, is a target. And it will wreak havoc. But based on what Kim just sent me, the climate crisis equals a health crisis equals a mental health crisis. Medical and physical health for older Americans, changes in fitness and activity level, heat-related illness, allergies. Really? we're practically green with pollen at this point in time. This one, though, is an interesting data point. Increased exposure to waterborne and vector-borne illness. Might as well go ahead and mention it because we talked about the particles of bird flu being found in the milk supply last week. Well, now scientists are saying that the H1N1 bird flu virus is appearing transferable not just to dairy cattle, but to kitty cats. That's worrisome. Mental health impacts of climate change on an aging population, stress, anxiety, depression, grief, sense of loss, strains on social relationships, substance abuse, post-traumatic stress disorder. Apparently, during the pandemic, and I'm still of the opinion that climate change played a role in the pandemic not in terms of coming from, like, the permafrost or anything. God only knows what kind of viral and bacterial stews are thawing in places like Siberia and northern Canada. But that the evolution of viruses like the COVID-19 virus may be made simpler or more likely by climate change. And God knows the pandemic elevated substance abuse problems in this country as people sat home and got loaded. In terms of community health, climate change can lead to increased interpersonal aggression, increased violence and crime, increased social instability, and decreased community cohesion. This seminar that Kim attended also points out that for over 65-year-olds, there will be a considerable change, elevation in heat-related mortality. And that's terrifying. Older Americans don't sweat as efficiently. Their blood doesn't circulate as well. I'm saying they. I should probably say we. Medical illnesses are exacerbated. There are declines in muscle mass. I know a little about that. But exacerbated medical illnesses include hypertension, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, pulmonary disease, COPD, kidney disease, dementias, other cognitive impairments. And of course, let's remember, Nitwit Nero moved down to Climate Change Central, down there at Maga Lardass. This is fascinating data, Kim. Thank you for sharing it. I appreciate it. Fires, floods, heat waves, extreme winter storms, or two warm winters. I didn't know this, but for instance, Hurricane Katrina in 2005, 75% of bodies found in immediate recovery were greater than 60 years old, 49% were over 75. Most of those people died in their homes. Hurricane Superstorm Sandy of 2012, 14% increase in depression in adults of greater than 60 years. And if you recall the Camp Fire wildfire in Paradise, California of 2018, 85% of the 86 mortality victims of the Camp Fire were over 60. Kim, I'm gonna look even further at this after the program. I find this incredibly helpful. Yeah, Kim says, I'm a ray of fucking sunshine, ain't I? Join the club, sis. And, Dave and the Blind jumped in. We're now down to 475. Dave said, I'm so amazed by the response. I'm going ahead and paying off my challenge, even though it had expired. There's $20 to the cause. Let's keep May happy. She's a really silly girl. She's not paid. I get that. In fact, with yesterday being the 1st of May, something came to mind. Namely, and to wit, oh dear God, she's gonna play a Broadway musical song. Oh no. But yeah, I don't know how. You'll get the word.
It's May. It's May, the lusty month of May, that lovely month when everyone goes blissfully astray. It's here, that shocking time of year, when tons of wicked little thoughts merrily appear. It's May, that gorgeous holiday, when every maiden itches for fun, wholesome or it's mad, depraved in every way. Those dreary vows that everyone takes, everyone breaks, everyone makes divine mistakes. The lusty month of May.
Must have been something in the water in merry old England. Because, I mean, if you recall Camelot, the movie version, I mean, is May in England really that warm? Girls laying around and with garlands of flowers in their hair, and men with their heads in the girls' laps. And never thought of May as being particularly lusty, but who the hell am I? Well, Roxanne, says Matt, thank God I remembered to take my Cymbalta this morning. Any other good news coming? I mean, besides the end of the world stuff? Oh, Matt, strap in. It's a parade of sunshine and violets for the next, goodness, 2 hours and 15 minutes. Nitwit Nero was back in court. Now there went the lusty month of May. Oh, who are we to say? It could happen any day in May. Oh, Roxanne, for shame. He's, among other things, today, Nitwit Nero went on to Tripe Social and posted a brand new tripe because he's desperate to refute the idea that he can't stay awake in the courtroom. And instead, he said,
fake news media, listen intensely and take it all in.
Yeah, sure you do. And, of course, he farts himself awake.
I don't fall asleep during the crooked DA's witch hunt, especially not today. I simply close my beautiful blue eyes.
Dear God, gag me with a backhoe.
My beautiful blue eyes.
Please.
My watery blue eyes. My very sleepy blue eyes.
His beautiful blue eyes. Is that, what? Why does that put me in mind? Well, I know why. Why does that send me time traveling back to 2000? What was it, 2004? When some member of the multimillionaire for-profit media asked Barbara Bush, love child of the Quaker Oats man, how she felt about the useless wasting of American lives in her, well, not quite as smart son's war against the people of Iraq. And she said, oh, why should I waste my beautiful mind thinking about who died or who got blown up? I mean, really? Why do Republicans have such a difficult time with empathy? And, of course, that was the same Barbara Bush who said she was afraid that the black people who had been evacuated from Katrina to the Astrodome in New Orleans, she was afraid that they would like it too much and just stay in Houston. Oh, quel horreur. Back to the napping nitwit and the nappies. Former prosecutor Harry Littman talked about the fact that he saw Julius Geezer take a bona fide nap and two quick dozes last week on Friday. It's getting testy in the courtroom, and we're only into, well, tomorrow will see us at the end of the first full week of testimony. And today, another of the pettifoggers, this one we haven't heard so much about, Susan Nichelle. She decided to argue with Judge Marchand about the gag order again and tried to, preemptively. Well, that's a good answer, Randy Radar, because they're all sociopaths. That's probably the most solid answer there is. After the lunch break today, Susan Nichelle swanned back into the courtroom and said, I have a stack of news articles from people like Jonathan Turley. Can my client share these articles on social media? I mean, we think these articles are perfectly fine. Prosecution team was having none of it. And said, seems odd that they're asking the court for an advanced ruling. And Susan Nichelle said, well, the gag order is ambiguous. Only to someone who's not particularly conversant with, words. So Judge Marchand slapped her down and said, I'm not going to give advanced rulings. There's no ambiguity. I think the best advice you can give your client is, when in doubt, steer clear. I'm not going to argue with this with you, Ms. Nichelle. Everything they do has an air of desperation to it. Everything they do is for an improper motive of delay. Everything they do is to try to set up something that they can later complain about. We talked about the Rolling Stone article about the jailbreak strategy to keep him out of jail when he finally does push Judge Marchand to his limit. But the funny thing about the jailbreak strategy is that we also had the story weeks ago that conversations are already taking place among law enforcement there in New York, including the Secret Service, about how to go about sending a former president to the joint for violating a gag order. And that in its own right, even if he were not to be convicted, in its own right, that would be a historic first, the first president of the United States ever sent to jail for any damn thing. And then the other cockamamie, harebrained notion that the Trump pettifoggers came up with today was teed up by Todd Blanche, who once had a career as a fairly respected federal prosecutor and then decided to throw it all away on dipshit Donnie. Shut the fuck up, Donnie. You're out of your depth. And Blanche wanted to, Blanche apparently, and by the way, all these reports coming from all these reports, this is why there absolutely must be transparency in the court system in this country. people must be able to watch this for themselves and not rely on interpretation from pixel-stained wretches, no matter how good a job they do. Evidence presented today included evidence that Nitwit Nero had violated the gag order again, some more, several times. And during oral arguments over the issue, Todd Blanche said, "That's not fair. President Biden talked about Stormy Daniels. It was a joke." President Biden said Tangerine Tiberius was dealing with some, wait for it, stormy weather. Cowbell for President Biden. And Pettifogger Blanche said, how can Trump respond? And Judge Mearshon said, he can't respond without mentioning a witness. He's not allowed to mention foreseeable witnesses in the case. He can certainly respond to President Biden. There's nothing that says he can't respond to President Biden. At which point, Todd Blanche, realizing that, curses, foiled again, moved on to his next bullshit argument. The degree of desperation has expanded beyond anything resembling a whiff. It's a full-on stench now. I mean, this is God, to have to sit next to him in court and that miasma of cosmetic fragrance and body odor and, for all I know, desitin and poop. Whatever Blanche is getting paid, it ain't enough. The lusty month of May in merry oldie England, Emilio serving as the Horn ad hoc England Weather Research Department said it's 53 degrees Fahrenheit and rainy in London right now, according to Google. Sounds about right. So much for all that lust. It's a very damp lust, apparently. A cold, damp lust. Of course, it's 53 in London right now, and that's at 53 at about, 11 p.m.? I wouldn't really expect it to be in the high 70s or anything. But, well, it was kind of a trifecta. Today for the pettifoggers there. Emil Bove had his moment of slap down as well. Cross-examining Keith Davidson, former lawyer for Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels, who negotiated the hush money payments. Emil Bove tried to drill down, corkscrew in as though he carried a rapier, and tried to say that the witnesses were making money off of celebrities, querying Davidson about settlements he had been involved with regarding Charlie Sheen, Lindsay Lohan, and Tia Tequila. Davidson said, I've got 1,500 clients. I don't remember all of them. Bob said, so you have a fuzzy memory? You extracted money from Charlie Sheen, right? What about porn star Capri Anderson? Davidson said, there's no extraction. At which Bo, frustrated, said, look, we're both lawyers. I'm not here to play lawyer games with you. I'm looking for truthful answers. And Davidson, practically sneering at Bo, said, I am giving you truthful answers, sir. If you're not here to play legal games, don't say the word extract. Extract? What, Davidson was like the dentist that Steve Martin played with Bill Murray in the chair? Extract? And so today, Tangerine Tiberius was shaking his head as Blanche tried to obfuscate with Judge Mershon. They were arguing about how many times Blanche's client had violated the gag order again some more. Apparently they haven't worked out the full details of the jailbreak strategy. Well, along the way, whether it was accidentally or on purpose, Blanche actually agreed with Judge Mershon. Mershon said, my client has a right to defend himself when the reporters ask questions. Kyle Griffin, tweeting over on what used to be Twitter for MSNBC, said, Judge Mershon, to Trump's lawyer, you're telling me this scrutiny is outrageous, but nobody's forcing him to talk to the press in the hall. The entire area has been set up the way it has been set up so that your client, who is a candidate for president, can exercise his political speech rights. Tyler McBrien from Lawfare said, Mershon cuts Blanche off to point out that in certain statements, Trump went to the press. The press didn't go to him. He quite literally could have gone out a different door. Nobody forced Trump. At which point, Todd Blanche committed the unpardonable sin. He said, well, Judge, I agree with that. And the press laughed. Norm Eisen said that that got under Blanche's client's skin. Oh my God, Blanche says, I agree with that. To judge regarding one of Trump's statements, Trump looks back to his coterie seated behind him, including Boris Epstein, Stein, and shakes his head in disgust. He always turns on his lawyers. Oh, of course he does. And when he loses this trial and gets sentenced to prison, the first thing he's going to file is an ineffective assistance of counsel claim, which ain't gonna fly. One more reason why this guy is gonna wind up in the joint. His pettifoggers are working. They're being forced to fight not a two-front, but a five-front war. And so down in the Southern District of Florida, there was yet another motion to dismiss the case today, in which his pettifoggers said, Hillary Clinton mishandled classified information first, and Joe Biden's a meanie, and everybody's discriminating against poor Donald. trying to earn his money, Blanche released a 178-page document today, a motion to dismiss for Florida, in which he claimed, I don't know if he was giggling when as he dictated this or not, American history is chock full of public examples involving alleged mishandling of classified information and documents which did not result in the type of politically motivated charges that the special counsel's office has brought against Trump, President Trump and his co-defendants. Well, none of those cases involved trying to hide the documents from the feds or schooling associates on how to lie about them. The 178-page motion to dismiss includes something that Blanche calls egregious examples, namely the investigation that cleared Joe Biden, conversations between Bill Clinton and the historian Taylor Branch for the Clinton tapes, and nothing would be complete without mention of Hillary Clinton's personal email. Of course, Hillary was also cleared of any wrongdoing. Noteworthy is the fact that also none of those things involved classified documents found stored, well, you know, stacked up in a potty or on the stage of the tacky-ass ballroom or any ballroom. Blanche said, the basis is his politics and status as President Biden's chief political rival. Thus, this case reflects the type of selective and vindictive prosecution that cannot be tolerated. Blanche was going for a third bite at the apple because even Judge Aileen Cannon, no Solon in her own right, has already shut Team Trump down twice. This may strike three. It was back in March when Jack Smith responded to all of this tomfoolery. Trump has not identified anyone who has engaged in a remotely similar battery of criminal conduct and not been prosecuted as a result. The documents weren't keepsakes, memorabilia, or trophies for him to keep and use as he pleased after his return to life as a private citizen. They contained sensitive, highly classified information related to the national defense, and they belong to the American people. True, 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 and true. Apparently, and thank you, Ralphs, for this, as he exited the courtroom, Lawrence O'Donnell was apparently in the gallery. And so Mango Mussolini tried to give him the stink eye and muttered under his breath. Adam Klasfeld said, I was sitting right next to him. I think Adam Klasfeld meant Lawrence O'Donnell, not Nitwit Nero, because if he'd been sitting next to Nitwit Nero, he would have been gagging from the fumes. Yeah, probably true, Emilio. Only a narcissist calls his own eyes beautiful without skipping a beat or skipping to his loo. Ralph's pointing out now, according to Jeff Tiedrick and John Gartner, Ph.D. in psychiatry, whom we talked about earlier this week, naps and farting are signs of dementia or Alzheimer's, both of which afflicted his daddy. And travel genetically. Oh, and Dave and the Blind, when the stroke. All right, people, let's set up a pool of when the stroke will occur. I think the goddess of irony is with me here. I'm predicting June 19th for obvious reasons. Tell me your date. I've got to fit it into the calendar. Your buddy, Dave and the Blind. Oh, Juneteenth for the stroke? The goddess of irony would absolutely... Oh, that would be out of the park and past the parking lot. Good call, Dave. Well, this ought to be fun. Jeff Daniels showed up today on The View. He was promoting his new Netflix, or his role in a new Netflix film, A Man in Full. That's a Tom Wolfe novel. Takes place in Atlanta, and it's about a real estate magnate. And he said for him, it seemed to have some resonance that wasn't necessarily based in Atlanta.
If you,
you know, of course, Atlanta in the 90s was go, 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 go. From the late 80s into the 90s, the entire skyline of Atlanta changed and got bigger and more beautiful, frankly.
You know, I guess the last time we saw you, or last time I saw you on stage is Atticus Finch in The Brilliant To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes.
But I just found out that it went on to become Broadway's highest grossing American play ever.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Ever.
Yeah. It was excellent.
So congrats, man. How's that kind of feel ever?
Well, that's, you know, it's records are made to be broken,
yeah.
But that one'll be hard.
It'll be a long time.
That was hard because, you know, I went in and all anybody could think about was Gregory Peck.
Yes. Yeah. Right, exactly.
And I had to go in with the attitude of he either is the definitive Atticus Finch or he's the only one who got to do it. So I took the second approach and I got away with it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you were really, really well, because your Atticus Finch was magnificent.
Thank you.
Was Gregory's.
Yeah.
But yours was also magnificent, as I told you. Anyway, that's my question.
Yeah. Thank you.
It was magnificent. I agree. And you're magnificent in A Man in Full. I couldn't stop watching. Yeah. Couldn't stop watching. It's a far cry from your character in To Kill a Mockingbird. It's based on the best-selling Tom Wolfe novel, mm-hmm. and you play Charlie Croker.
Yeah, close
a on. larger-than-life real
Frankie
estate
Crocker,
mogul.
Charlie Croker.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking Frankie Croker.
I know you.
A larger-than-life real estate mogul obsessed with being a man's man.
Yeah.
All right? He's a man's man.
Back where men were men and everyone else was inferior.
Yes. That's his thing. How fun was it to play him? And that southern accent, man, that was great.
Well, first you got to come up with a southern accent. And in Atlanta, I mean, apparently everyone in Atlanta has read that book.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which was like written in the late 90s.
Yeah.
And so, but the accent was, there are people in Atlanta that have a little accent and there's some that have that.
Yes.
And so I stole from the internet, you know, some senators telling a big long 5-minute story, uh-huh. you know, I'll tell you what. And then Tom Wolfe writes that Charlie's accent becomes so thick sometimes you can't understand him.
Yes.
So I got to blow it up, and then when it got so thick, I just did vowels.
Right.
I eliminated consonants. I'm going to go down to Baker County and get some groceries.
I'm going to go down to Bay County and get some rope.
I said, oh, yes, yes.
I understand it.
Yeah, yes. Just enough to go, what did he say? Yeah,
I put the subtitles on.
Yeah. Kathleen, my wife was going, they're not going to be able to understand you.
It was great, though.
You've got to be able to,
It was great. Now, the series has these incredible heavy hitters like David E. Kelly, Regina King behind the camera directing the first episode. Yeah. A great cast including Diane Lane, Lucy Liu.
Yep.
Shania Twain even makes an appearance to serenade you on your 60th birthday.
She was paid, but yeah. She
did. I mean, what was that like?
Well, it's Shania Twain. And Charlie in the first episode, the first scenes, throws himself a 60th birthday party.
Yeah.
Pays for it.
Yeah.
And hires Shania Twain to come and sing for him.
Yeah.
It tracks with your character.
Male ego.
Yeah.
And literally, I stand there like that while Shania Twain is singing me, looks like you've made it. You know? And it's
so
like,
good.
This is like, I know who Charlie is now.
Yeah.
She was great. She was
so
such
good.
A pro. She
well, in
great.
Watching this, you can't help but draw some parallels to another, you know, real estate mogul that we're all aware of, Donald Trump, who likes to stamp his name on buildings like your character. He likes to inflate his wealth, obviously has this big ego. Did you think of him at all in playing this role?
No, but
you weren't just up late thinking about him.
It's relevant. You know, I mean, again, Tom Wolfe wrote it in the 90s. He based it on two or three guys in Atlanta that he knew that I found out about a little bit. Mm. But, yeah, it's that larger than the correlation is larger than life. I'm worth zillions of dollars when you're really not.
No.
And we're in a courtroom, you know, pretending we didn't have sex with a porn star.
Here.
Pretending.
You know. And we're going to have more with Jeff Daniels when we come back.
I think... Well, unpaid product placement, but I think I'm going to have to check that out on Netflix. Jeff Daniels never mails it in. Pretending I didn't have sex with a porn star. Speaking of which, we now have some idea of how melanoma responded when she found out that her Donald had been carrying on with a Playboy bunny and a porn star. It comes by a Stephanie Winston Wolkoff, who used to be the senior aide to melanoma. And said that melanoma was well aware of her hubby's peccadilloes. Apparently his peccadillo is about this. Never mind. Something about mushrooms. And so today she shared some text messages. She said, I was worried sick about melanoma about hours before Donald's second presidential debate and texted her, are you okay? And melanoma responded and said, hi, love, I canceled interview tomorrow with Anderson Cooper and wanted to know if I had time for lunch. She wanted to talk. It's an unconventional marriage and she's complicit. Remember that melanoma doesn't care what anyone thinks about her or Donald. She knows who she married and so does he. And then at Manhattan DA. Oh, Steffers wants to see her former boss subpoenaed. At one time saying, I don't care about girls if you don't. Let me know. And every text message ends with XO, hugs and kisses. Well, he knew who he was marrying. Came to America on a genius grant. Oh, my aching back. Actually, it's not so much that she's complicit. There is a concept in divorce law, at least here, probably other jurisdictions as well. And it's the word that's used to describe a situation when your spouse, you've caught your spouse cheating and then are silly enough to go back to bed with him. And that term is condonation. So let's say Melanoma did sue in divorce on grounds of adultery. And there was evidence that they had made the ficky fick afterward. Well, the defense would offer up the affirmative defense of, well, yeah, but she screwed me after. We plead condonation. Which is nothing like Condoleezza. But it is kind of sleazy. Oh, stop. Let's take a minute, because I hate to keep people on hold. Let's take a minute and run across over to the stress line and see who we've got over there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Auntie Robin.
Wave, how are you?
Hello, Auntie Robin. This is the most epic and fucking call I've ever made in my whole life. So I'm going to try to you can hear it, coherent, and stay out of the wind zone. But I actually imagined this call. Seriously, I did. Not the whole thing, not the context, not the script, as it were. But I saw a piece of the back of the tape. Firstly, today is a live broadcast to my family who's listening, who's all in the state of Florida.
Hi,
my
fam.
Dad, name is Bert. Y'all here? Auntie Conti, Auntie Phyllis, this shout out is to you.
It certainly
told
is.
Told you I'd do it. They can't believe it. And you know what? Our first deep connection was how much you reminded me of my Auntie Conti. And when you said you were Aquarius, I was like, yep. Your love of food and your inability to shut up. There it is. Auntie Conti was the first woman in our family who had her master's. She's an Aquarius. She did whatever the fuck she wanted, wherever. I once first saw her fight four guys because she had said something rude. And my dad had to pull off. And this was in the Bronx. Now that question pleasure. Auntie Phyllis, the nicest person I've ever. Auntie Phyllis was nicer than my mom. I love my mom, but Auntie Phyllis was just, I was on Mars. You know, where if something bad happened to Auntie Phyllis, I'd be on the net rocket. The Britons. The Auntie Phyllis lost Bunny, my closest cousin, Donovan. That made a terrible day worse because I was losing Karen. Now, this is the beginning of COVID, but that put the stone in my throat that anybody's like, oh, it's not real. I will end you, motherfucker. Hope it's real. I'm grieving over this, and I haven't even grieved over my closest cousin, and he's younger than me. It was in the first surge when they were just putting bags outside in New York. And I haven't been able to process to that. I got to talk to my 90-year-old aunties because I'm doing the thing that through my life, I'm going to tell you exactly how I feel because I might not see you anymore. I'm going to tell you how much you've meant to me, how much you've changed me and everything. And I'm going to use the words people, I have lived without fear for a while. This is a big call. I've been dying to say these things. Incredible things have happened. Terrible things have happened. And I said, you know what? I can't write this thing. I got to get my shit together, put a little bus together, get my work, get over my fears, and lay it all out. All right, we need a start point. On one of my trips to the mental hospital that I documented, my shit was fucked up. When I call my brother, youngest brother, Kirk, we're still in. Do you have your key? You have a key card pulling in there, Auntie Robin?
I'm sorry. You kind of broke up there. Slow down. Slow down a little bit, Wave.
Slow down. You're right. All right. Is this better? I have more discrimination on the microphone now. Yeah?
Okay, better.
My brother, almost a year and a half ago, had the opportunity to help my youngest brother. And he took the opportunity to call me a crackhead and use a old, tired Dave Chappelle meme. And he thought it was funny. One thing I've always done to my brothers and sisters that they never know is I never gave them a true version of me. I never gave them the outside me. You understand what I'm saying, Robin? Let's start. When I was having my incidents, you stepped out the closet that said you were born a man.
Don't remind me.
Was in fact a woman. No, I have to, because I'm stepping out the closet. No high heels this time, but there's a spotlight and disco ball. Come on, baby, hang with me here.
Okay, right? I'm here.
The nicest thing in my mental breakdown is bipolar rapid cycler. The bipolar is the sparks that fly from the increased neural processing I have from being an evolutionary multiple personality person. And I'm not saying that to go, oh, forgive my sins, a multiple personality, I don't know what I'm doing. No, I'm a fucking superhero. When my shit's right, I'm unbeatable. And that's the hate I've got my whole life. I am different. There's nothing wrong with me. There's many of me, and it's hierarchical 99% of the time. And I'm just faster and better than most. I know things I shouldn't. And this is real. And I'm going to, so when I speak too fast, the personalities are trying to talk. Leroy, remember when you'd done all that Taekwondo and you were definitely going to kick my ass? I saw what you were going to do before you were doing it. And I just pissed you off because you tried me. But I always had the brakes on because I didn't want you all to feel bad. And I didn't really believe for a moment that you hated me. And the reorganization of my brain after the traumatic brain injury allowed me to see that the hate I was feeling was yours. Also, I hear thoughts. Yeah, that's the other thing I do. Not schizophrenic, right? You should ask. Have you ever sat down and talked to me about any of this? Oh, by the way, Carolyn told me, and that was one thing I didn't believe in. Son of a bitch, if she wasn't right. She goes, your brother would just hate you. I want bad things for you. I was like, how could that even be true? I sacrificed my childhood for them. I kept mom and dad together so they'd have a family. My mom and dad loved each other, but they were neither good fans of each other. They just weren't incompatible. They saw the world completely different ways. And they fought a lot. My first words were mommy the clutch because I was trying to break up a fight. And when I feel their tension, especially when I was a teenager, because things were rough. They were looking in other different directions and questions were being asked and plates were being thrown. I'd start a fight or a kerfuffle or a disturbance so that focus would be on me. Now, let's move on to the good part. I'm the coolest person you don't know. I'm the most famous person that's not in any books. I have a Diddy story. I have a, who do I have a story for? I have a Luther Campbell story, a Steve Aoki story, a Robert Englund story, a Don Shula story, a Dwayne Wayne story, a LeBron story. People tell me secrets, and I keep them. People trust me instantly. Girls and boys want to fuck me, okay? Still.
Dude.
Y'all are fat, old. Yeah, no, we're going in. We're going in.
Well, don't go too in.
I've always been awesome. Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. I've always been awesome. I'm going to lose the, and I've hid it from you under a bush, as they say, because you hated me. And I incorporated your hate into myself. And one day, recently, I was like, I don't hate myself. They hate me. And they're stupid. Oh, Leroy, when you were telling me about Shiba Inu after I worked on the blockchain of Bitcoin, it was really hysterical. I think Shiba Inu has .00009 and Bitcoin's $53,000 today or something like that. And I have more Bitcoin than you have debt. The greatest thing a poor person does is act rich, and a rich person acts poor. I saw that people thought I was a homeless crackhead, that at least there weren't any active police investigations, and nobody wanted me for anything. I could just live my life carefree. My life, I came to the Keys homeless. I'm buying a trailer and a boat. I think my girlfriend's 30 years old, and she's gorgeous. And everybody wants me where they're at because, and we're speaking very gently here, I help ugly people and old men get laid with consent. I'm a great DJ. I'm a funny person. I'm the most charismatic person I know who doesn't have a film contract. I'm good at everything I do. I live with passion. I don't look behind my back. Nobody tells me to do shit. Yolanda, you're a nurse and you hate people. Kirk, you learned all your stuff from me and you hate it. And Leroy, you learned how to do computers because you pissed off at me and you hate it. I've always told you to do what you love and I'd always have you back because I don't really live for myself. I kind of just float. But if somebody needs something, my superpowers kick in. Somebody said, oh, here comes Captain Save-A-Ho, pretty much. Strippers buy me drinks, Kirk, and want to go home with me and want me to marry them. And they said they'd support me. I hope that burns, okay? I've always pulled my punches because I loved you. You're my favorite fucking people in the world. And for the last 1,000 days, wow, the fact that you were comfortable with me dying or being in pain, I've moved past that. And I just hope things work out for you. But if I leave a room as you show up or I get one-word answers, well, we kind of know what's going on here. Pops, oh, my God. I was 30 years old before I didn't know you were 7 feet tall. You are still the baddest man I've ever seen. I decompress things that you taught me. You taught me so well. I could survive millions of lifetimes with what I learned from you. And you stuck it out. I love your wife. She's great. I tell a joke that you told after your heart surgery as a dirty old man joke. It's great. It gets better every time. I'm not telling Omar and Mo. Yeah, this is adult stuff, so go do something else. And Mo, you're the smartest human being I've ever met. God bless you. Any height you reach, I'm going to help draw a ladder. I was serious about that insecticide thing, and I've already talked to the Florida Keys mosquito people, which anybody knows, that's a $1 billion contract. I've been a billionaire a couple times over. Everything I walked away blew up, but I never really cared about money. Money attracts terrible people. And the only way to know how people really feel about you is to be broke. Because everybody lies, and I have gotten good at pretending I didn't notice lies or even notice that they were lying. The reason why I've been always so awkward is because people are full of shit and I can see the future. I saw Andrew before it happened. I saved Dad from COVID and I kept Mom 4 months around so we could all have a Christmas. That was me. And you know what? Didn't have to brag. The reason why you don't think I have anything is that's how people get caught. When authorities think there's assets to seize, they seize them. I got more. Let me breathe. Hold on. The Skybus back to Marathon is leaving. All right. Oh, yeah, Poppy, give us a right up there. Hold on. You like that, huh? Do I sound nice in Cuban? Hey, Eddie, shout out to you. No, I got it. I'll bring it up to you. Eddie is my closest brother. Eddie was ride or die, and he still kept my secrets. Okay? And as your stories are winding down, mine is blowing up. And the only thing that makes me sad these days is, man, y'all should have been here. Anyways, my family, my true family, my girls are going to show up. I'm going to do it for them what they can. And Sophia, my absorbed sister, you need a cook. You're the second best cook I've ever met. Kirk's not taking care of you. And I love you to death. Bring everybody. I got more, but let me catch my breath here. What's that, bud? Hello?
I'm right here.
You there?
No, I'm here.
That is the
same. I'm just trying to dude, I'm just trying to keep up.
Go ahead. These are all, what's it called? You know the stuff that you always wanted to say to your family, but never get to say because everybody's pretending?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Kind of.
Yeah, this was that. And I'm just out pretending. Pretending stops my processing power. I spent my whole life pretending, adjusting the curve, as they say. I was always smarter and faster. I just wanted friends. I felt weird that I could solve a test in 3 minutes. Turns out, I have a photographic memory. Wait, you know that?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. If the photographer was Salvador Dali, I'm right there.
So it's not that I. You know, I'm sure Michael Jackson's brothers are pissed off. Michael Jordan's brothers are pissed off. He's Michael Jordan. You know, I'm sure Bill Gates' brothers and go. I've met Bill Gates and clowned on Steve Jobs. I've just always been in the right place in the right time. I'm blessed. I don't know why. I'm going to stop fighting it, though. The only time negative things happen is when Anyways, anytime you've actually been in the hole, financially, some deep, dark, scary number, I've always tried to come up with $1, $2, $5, and then another miracle would happen. I make miracles happen, and I try not to take credit. It gets messy that way. People I care about, I literally lose heaven.
You really have. You absolutely have. Yeah. You absolutely have.
Because that's who I am. I think that's how superheroes should act. Anyways, let's get to the meat here. What kicked this all off? This is a loop I've lived in my whole life. And God's sense of humor is to make me talk this way and be this way and be black. And if I got that, you know, what if we put a minor level mutant in the later days of the 20th and 21st century? Well, we made him black for laws. What do you think? Hey, hi, everybody. Yeah, that'd be interesting. That's my life, man. That's my life. Everybody loves me. Black people, white people. Anyways, I've had two people bugging on me since I got there. They were the fake friends, you know, instantly befriend you. They were inventorying and I'm writing an article about this, and I have to go to court on the 6th, 5th of next week. I'm going to wear a suit, and for the first time in my life, gloves off, safety off, nukes activated. I'm going to end them. They're going to prison. I'm not letting it go. It was a hate crime. The word nigger was said 60 times. And at the end, I was running about 15 to 18 miles an hour while a racist who was pissed off that his girl was starting to look at me slightly different wanted to stab me. And I've seen that look before because I used to work in club security and been around killers and dangerous people. Oh, yeah, that's right, Kurt. Yeah, I'm a trained fighter. But I don't have to bring it up. It's true, trained fighters. I don't have to bring it up. We're taught not to. And I let me spin back to that. My first training in, which one was this? This was, yeah, I know multiple styles. Private training, too, not just doing stupid punches with white keys on. My first black belt one-on-one instructor, I was asking him for a special thing. I go, hey, look, if you're in a scrape, right? And somebody pulls out a knife. Well, how do I stand? Do I do a couple of kicks? Do I do a couple of punches? He goes, no. He goes, I'm going to teach you telephone flu. I go, telephone flu? He goes, yeah. You got a cell phone? I go, yeah, yeah. He goes, always keep it charged. I go, okay, yeah, okay, okay. Leave the house in 50% leave. Yeah. I mean, he said that. You get into a scrape? Yeah. It's dark? Yeah. Run and call 911. There's no way that's going to work out for you. Like, what? He goes, no. When somebody has that much aggression and bad thoughts, the worst you can do is stretch a ligament and be sitting in jail for murder or attempted murder. And then you're going to have to tell your story from the other side of the bars. The best way to tell your story is to not leave a punch and call 911. And you know what? I think I still owe that guy for that message because that's what happened. I had people, drunk people, high people, drug addicts, this delineation is very important, who were trying to anger me. I was having one of those detachment Dr. Spock days. They spun wrong, you know, where my Dr. Spock personality pulled up and everything was logical and just. And indeed. And I was just very demure, and I accepted the world the way it was. People hate that, by the way. People like to rile you up. You know what I mean, Robin?
I do.
Their only power is pushing your buttons. So when you move the buttons, or you go all, you know, like, there is no buttons, it kind of freaks them out. They have a look on their face like a dog sitting on the ground.
We lost Wade. Happens sometimes. That was the inimitable Wade. And I don't really know where to take the program from there. Lines are open. Ring in or else maybe... I can do the hog husbandry report or something. Jeez. Thanks, Wave. It was good to hear from you. Yeah, I gotta reboot somehow. And I'll figure out how in a minute. Something I mentioned at the beginning of the program. I wish to goodness I had audio of this, but I don't. This is, there it is. I mentioned we had a story regarding Senator Jubilation T. Cornpone, also known as, Senator Foghorn Leghorn, also known as Senator John Kennedy of Louisianistan, who has a degree from Oxford, and I don't mean the one in Mississippi. If you want to go looking around, back when he was, treasurer of the state of Louisianistan and would make public appearances, he knew how to speak perfectly good English. But now that he needs the wool hats... To vote for him. He gooies it up a little bit and starts. You know what Jeff Daniels was talking about? I got to where I was just doing vowels. Well, that's Senator Kennedy. And so there was a Senate Budget Committee hearing, which nominally should not be a place for a hell of a lot of fireworks, but a witness by the name of Professor Jeffrey Supron appeared at the hearing to talk about the propaganda and misinformation tactics of the oil industry. He began his prepared remarks by saying, "Big oil is the new big tobacco. As a scholar of disinformation, I do not use the word lie lightly, but no other word adequately describes the oil industry's brazen efforts to mislead the public about its history of misleading the public." And when he was done with his statement, Senator Kennedy looked at him and said, well, he started querying Professor Supron about things that Professor Supron never said, asking him repeatedly about things that were written or published or tweeted by a new climate action group called Climate Defiance. And in a hearing of the Senate of the United States Budget Committee, did I mention it was the Senate of the United States? I guess trying to score points with the oil industry folks back home in Louisiana style. He started reading the tweets to Professor Supron and said, would this be the same climate defiance that called Senator Joe Biden a sick fuck?
What? Huh? Uh-oh.
Professor Supron said, oh no. Not to be deterred. No, the turd stayed right with him. Senator Cornpone went ahead and asked, would this be the same climate defiance that called Senator Lisa Murkowski a muddle? Professor Supron again, I don't know. You know, because he's not climate defiance.
Would this be the same climate defiance that told the CEO of Exxon to eat shit, Darren?
And Professor Supron, having rightfully had about enough of this, said, I'm not responsible for the statements of other people. And then Senator Jubilation T. Cornpone said,
well, you are, in fact, the author of the climate defiance tweet that you shared on December the 14th that said that the group's tactics don't include things that the group's tactics don't include, namely online petitions, coalition letters, and fucking bus stop ads.
Supron looked at the rest of the committee and said, this form of character assassination is characteristic of the kinds of propaganda techniques of the fossil fuel industry. At which point, apparently clearly off of his meds, Senator Foghorn Leghorn said, are you going to call me a sick fuck? Well, it's like, you know, Professor, if you won't, I will. There was a time when the Senate of the United States was referred to as the world's most exclusive debating society. But now the senior senator from Louisiana stand sits in committee hearings hollering about people getting called a sick fuck. And probably most importantly, and by the way, the entire hearing room just burst into laughter. Don't laugh, y'all. It only encourages him. Is this what maggotry does to a person's brain? But then again, he had to do something to divert Professor Supron from the fact that he was there to actually talk about the manifest monumental disinformation campaigns in which the hydrocarbon industries engage. And I guess the industries and their paid mouthpieces like Senator Sickfoot are right nervous because there are court cases that might actually see these aforementioned industries held liable for the harm that they did, thus making even more appropriate the statement by Professor Supron that big oil is the new big tobacco, because big tobacco finally got, to one degree or another, held accountable. And that's why Joe Camel had to go away. At least they didn't walk up to Joe Camel with his shotgun and shoot him once and not finish the job and have to go back for a second shell. I recognize some of this in the way the coal industry has behaved in this state. Jesus. And by the way, we got down to $4.95 to go in fundraising, and we're coming up on the third hour of the program. If we could, raise $195, that would at least take care of yesterday and have us fully funded for the first day of May, if not the second. Good Lord. Ralph's has apparently found it. I think this is the clip, Ralphs. It was published by Forbes Breaking News. Did I read that correctly? John Kennedy does not let up on witness over ties to radical group. How is wanting to keep the planet hospitable to human life a radical act? Anybody? I don't know if I want to hear sick fuck that many more times, but thanks for finding the clip, Ralphs. I appreciate it. Let's go back over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, girl, hey.
Hey, girl, hey.
So, I'm just tuning in because I need a break from this research that I'm doing for my new job or consulting thing, and I'm like, okay, my brain is melting. So I just thought I'd call to see how you be.
You know what? Brains actually do get tired.
Mm-hmm.
Mine got downright exhausted yesterday.
How bad was it?
Oh, I'm just trying to sort out the whys and wherefores of a new piece of equipment on the fly.
And reading
an instruction manual that was written in Australian.
Written in Australian? Isn't that English?
Have you ever talked to an Australian there, Sheila?
No. Well, yes, I have. You know what? This is why we can't have nice things. This is why we can't have nice things. But did you get everything that you were you able to work everything
yes,
out with Mike?
Everything's working beautifully, and that unit is amazing.
And yes, I'm
having unit envy. That's going to come across filthy.
I know.
I don't envy units anymore. Never really did before either, but never mind. Well, there we went. Straight into the gutter before we got to the third hour of the program. Well, damn it. But, you know, like Mayella Yule, I may be able to save my nickels for a slap year and buy me one of them newfangled devices.
Newfangled devices?
The device I have relies on an internet connection from a PC.
Okay.
On the other hand, however, the new version has its own network card in it. And can connect either via an Ethernet cable or Wi-Fi.
Oh.
In theory, if I ever go on the road again,
on the road again.
You sing so pretty. But if I ever go on the road again, I could at least not, theoretically, just take that and a microphone and a power cord with me and be good to go. Which I find absolutely mind-blowing. Because this thing changed everything. It used to be when I went on the road, I had to take like 300 pounds of equipment with me. It was a real pain in the ass. This got it down to two bags, one with the microphone and the mic stands and the laptop in it, and the other with, you know, this interface in it. Well, I think they could get down to one bag. It's astonishing. And all the effects of a great big fancy-ass border right there. Yeah, oh yeah.
That would be nice, but how expensive is it?
Oh, it's 700 simoleons.
Oh, shit. That might as well be still a million right now.
For me, yes. I should have known. You know, I should have known. I did know. It took less than 2 minutes before Matt Rock wrote in and said,
Roxanne,
never let anyone make you feel bad about playing with your unit. Meow. You people.
See, that's my fault.
You people.
I apologize. Oh, now I just got you people. Oh, shit.
You earned that, you people.
Well, I forget who I'm dealing with.
Oh, wait a minute. What do you mean who you're dealing with? You're dealing with me. Oh, wait, never mind.
No, I'm talking about not just you, but the Horn family in general. And sometimes I forget that generally, the members of the Horn family are very quick and very ready, and so it is very
easy, and
don't miss shit. They don't, and it leaves you sitting there like, no. That's just wow. I can't even imagine that, you know, like, because I'm not that quick. Every so often I am quick on the uptake, but not very often. So stuff goes way over my head, and then, or just, okay. I wouldn't say this goes way over my head, but just sometimes I'm like, somebody will say something and I hear it. And it just takes my brain a little bit longer to disseminate it. And it's like, oh. And it's usually, you know, an hour or so after somebody says something to me. And I'm like, ah. I'm just like, I don't know. So have you guys talked about what's happening, you know, with the cops and riot gear out here at colleges in California?
No, actually, and when I heard that it was you on the line, it's like, oh, good, we're going to talk about what they did at UCLA today.
Right? Or late last night, early this morning?
It was, I had my alarm set for 7 because I was supposed to, because I had traveling to do today. I woke up at 5 instead.
So you watched Good Filthy Morning Habit?
Yes, I did. And the first hour was just taking a live feed of the cops, you know, wanting to get their skull busting on.
They were listening to the news report and how skewed things are, even out here. And it's definitely, KNX is, you know, I would say definitely middle of the road, but they can be very establishment. And I wouldn't say straight up pro LAPD. Today was, a failure in participatory democracy. It was a failure in freedom of speech. I definitely feel that there were people there who were definitely bad actors, who were agents provocateurs, who were there. I was feeling very COINTELPRO-y about the whole situation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's rough when you start feeling all COINTELPRO-y because unless hallucinogens are involved, you're probably right.
Right, and you know I can't do hallucinogens because I get T-tested.
Among other good reasons not to, yes.
I mean, at this late stage of my life, soon to be 58 years old, I am not fucking with hallucinogenic drugs. I might go on a trip and never come back. So that shit, I missed that train a long time ago. That ship has sailed. So, you know, I'm just trying to get to the point where I can smoke weed legally, you know?
That mean, or hey, because it will show up in a pee test, so that you could use like a THC infused topical lotion on places that are sore on your your aging body.
Expand. Right.
Sorry, no, like I was trying to be gentle. We're old ladies.
It's true. It's just. I'm an old woman, you know, and the ache, like yesterday, so yesterday I went to went to city council to sit and listen to, the budget committee. And I stayed for public comments because I was going to make a comment. But one of the organizations that I'm working with is asking the city of Los Angeles to give, you know, to spend $4.5 million to centralize dispatch for unarmed crisis response. And listening to some of the stuff that they were cutting, like cutting, of course, funds for domestic violence survivors, one of the things that they were talking about was how domestic violence is a direct, there's a direct causation from domestic violence survivors to homelessness. And, you know, when women get a chance, you know, when women finally decide, or whomever, finally, you know, women, people that identified as female or whoever, non-binary folks, victims of domestic abuse, it usually takes about 7 times before the woman leaves, before the person leaves.
Back in the 90s, when I was working directly with victims of domestic abuse, the statistic was it happens 9 times before she either leaves or gets killed.
Or she gets killed. Mm-hmm. And so when she finally gets the courage to leave, they're talking about gutting programs that gives the women and their children or whomever a place to stay safely to start a new life. But yet, you know the reason why we're having such a budget deficit issue in LA? You want to guess? Come on, guess. Come on, sis, guess.
Because cops are expensive?
Yes. So, Karen Bass I was typing to a customer service rep. So Karen Bass, put forth a budget that one of the things that they wanted to do is raise the starting salary for LAPD recruits. The problem is, because, you know, the reason behind that was that we need more cops, and so we need to be competitive with other cities, so we're going to raise the starting salary for LAPD officers in hopes to increase recruiting. Guess what? Recruiting hasn't increased. but yet we have this loaded budget for LAPD. Could you imagine what would happen if we put maybe starting salary for LA Unified School Teachers? I don't even think the starting salaries for LA Unified School Teachers is, like, I think, I gotta ask my brother, but I think, you know, plus they just, you know, averted a strike and they did get a substantial raise. But, I think before the raise, the starting salary for LA Unified School Teachers was about $65,000. And if you live maybe in where you live, $65,000 a year would be fine, or would it? I'm assuming.
It wouldn't be awful. And it's damn
it
sure.
Be awful.
It's
okay.
It's damn sure not where a newbie teacher starts.
Right. You know, so I just wonder, and so with that said about LAPD and how their bloated budget, fast forward to this morning, they start coming. This is from what I've gathered. When this all started, it was under the purview of UCLA PD. First of all, why does a college even have a police department?
I can answer
that. That's a whole other conversation.
Ooh, Mr. Cotta, pick me.
Mr. Cotta. Okay, Horseshack, what?
Because after the unrest on college campuses of the 1960s, the late 60s and early 70s, colleges decided they needed their own cops.
You get the gold star for today, Roxanne.
Thank you.
You know, and so they didn't do anything. They just kind of let it go, you know, whatever. And then it got, okay, according to college officials, it started getting out of hand. And I don't know our definition about a hand and college professionals, you know, college officials, government officials, the people who get paid a lot of money to do nothing, we have two totally different definitions of out of hand. The next thing I know this morning when I woke up, I woke up at 3 o'clock. Yeah, about 3 something this morning, my time, which is 6 something your time. So,
and by that
turn
and,
on the news.
Right. And by that time, Grandpa Joe was in full on, get off my lawn mode.
Oh, he was, shit.
And his ride or die Donnie Deutsch was right there, saying that everybody there at UCLA was pro Hamas.
Right.
Which is just let me just take a minute, Tracy. Which is just fucking ludicrous.
That part.
These aren't pro-Hamas protesters. And frankly, I'm just going to say this. If there's anyone at these college protests who are walking around hollering, kill the Jews, or Hamas was right, or I'm pro-Hamas, you know what the first thing you do with an asshole like that is? And a lot of people...
ask to put it back.
Yeah, show me your fucking badge. Because that's a cop trying to start some shit that the cops can come in and bust some skulls.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong? Am I being paranoid? I mean, because this has only happened with every major social justice movement since the dawn of damn time.
That part. I mean... you figure, you know, with the strike bucks thing,
the FBI tried to infiltrate the Black Panther Party for self-defense.
Not try to infiltrate.
Oh, sorry, infiltrate. Yeah, my bad. Thank you for the schooling.
No, they did. That's why Fred Hampton is dead. was murdered.
That's exactly why Fred Hampton was murdered.
And of course, we saw it
in the anti-mountaintop removal movement.
Right. Well, look at the early strike movement. You know, with the Pinkertons coming in for Matewan.
Yeah.
You cannot tell me. I mean,
honey, that movie, which is one of my favorites, and I think John Sayles is just a genius. That movie, Matewan, and as far as I know, it's still viewable for free on YouTube.
It is.
It details it's of course dramatized, but it details the story in part. One of the characters is a store owner named C.E. Lively. And C.E. Lively ran a general store in Matewan, West Virginia, and pretended to be a friend of the union organizers for the UMWA, United Mine Workers of America. And the whole time that he was sitting there inside these union meetings, every word that was said, he was sending back to the Baldwin Felts detective agencies, commonly known as the Baldwin Thugs. And so everything that the miners did, the Baldwin Thugs knew they were going to do before they did it.
Before they did it.
And his descendants are alive today. I read an article years and years ago. He fled West Virginia to keep from being killed by the people he'd betrayed. And his descendants, I think, grew up in the greater Atlanta area, or at least live there. Oh, he was a Judas of the First Order. Any revolutionary movement, any social justice movement, any movement that challenges the status quo, the cops or private security or, you know, good God, look at what the FBI did both to Dr. King and to Malcolm X.
Right.
Just for starters. Or to SNCC.
SNCC, like I said, Black Panther.
SDS.
Thank you for saying the self-defense part.
I never mentioned without saying for self-defense.
That part.
Never. But there's no doubt that that's happened at Columbia. There's no doubt that that's happened everywhere that the cops have moved in. Good God, they sent mounted cops, you know, on horses in at the University of Texas.
Get the fuck out of here.
It reminded me when the cops on horseback attacked the Lakota people. When they were protesting the pipeline.
Don't forget the cops on horseback when the Haitian refugees were trying to come into the United States at the same time the Ukrainians were coming in, but the Ukrainians didn't get chased down by Border Patrol on horseback.
Wonder why?
Gee, I wonder why. Just like we were saying. And, you know, but it's just all this is stemming from USC's, decision to keep the young Palestinian woman who they chose. Okay. Back girl. When you become valedictorian, and because there's quite a few people, I guess, who can claim that honor or what have you, doesn't the school choose who the valedictorian is, the one that's going to speak on, you know, at the commencement, yes?
It's at least in theory a meritocracy. You've got the best grade point average over the time of your matriculation. You're valedictorian, and then the second best is salutatorian.
Okay. Did they or did they not know she was Palestinian?
I mean, it wasn't tattooed on the back of her neck or anything, but I'm pretty sure they were aware.
Okay.
And I'll bet at one point in time, USC was terribly, terribly proud of their effort at DEI over her.
That part.
I get so frustrated. You know, Flavio wrote to me early this morning and said, at this point in time, Morning Joe's become unlistenable. And I was embarrassed for them.
I can only imagine.
These people are, you know, they're multimillionaires, so they are divorced from everyday life. Remember when George H.W. Bush didn't understand what a barcode scanner was at the grocery store?
Yeah, because he didn't go to the grocery store.
Right. And of course, they have neighbors, and they don't want their neighbors thinking that they're pro-Hamas. I give credit where credit's due. I don't know how right he was. But this morning, Jehoshaphat said, these students aren't protesting the corrupt government of Bibi Netanyahu. Well, you know, thank you for acknowledging it's corrupt. But then, as Dr. Allen said in the note that I read at the beginning of the program, that is my go-to in the morning. Because I like to see not just what they're including, but what they're leaving out.
What they're leaving out.
And on this program, we have talked and talked and talked about the fascist, and I don't use that as a slur or an insult. I use that as a legitimate descriptive word to talk about certain members of the Israeli government. The fascist element of that government. Bezalel Smotrich is one. I refer to him as What's-His-Fuck Ben-Gavir because I can never remember that fascist asshole's first name.
So
nobody who has ever tuned into Morning Joe has ever found out from the Morning Zoo crew there that probably the most toxic man, and it's a competition, in Bibi Netanyahu's...
I know, that's a horrible competition.
Yeah, it is. But the most horrid man in Bibi Netanyahu's government, and I reported on this a couple of nights ago, has said that Palestinians who raised their hands in surrender in Gaza should just be taken out and shot. Dead. To create room in Israeli prisons for more Palestinians. Nobody who's ever tuned in to the multimillionaire for-profit media, whether it be CBS, ABC, NBC, CNBC, MSNBC, and God knows not Fox, knows that same Ben-Gavir asshole has been convicted by Israeli courts. Not some court somewhere else. Courts operating under the law of the state of Israel. He has been convicted either 8 or 9 times of both incitement and straight up terrorism. And he's in the cabinet of Israel. I wonder if Donnie Deutsch knows that.
Mm-hmm.
Seems abundantly evident that Joe doesn't. If he starts talking about it tomorrow, we'll know. Well, hi, y'all. But they don't know because you have to go looking around because it's hard to find it
within the American multimillionaire for-profit media. Because it is inconvenient to the narrative, Tracy.
What is that, inconvenient truth?
I mean, I understand that convenience is everything. And the whataboutism and the, I mean, Grandpa Joe, and you know, this really does say something. Correlation is not causation, of course. And similarity breeds contempt. But you got two people here, born within months of each other, growing up, at least in Scarborough's part, at least somewhat in Alabama, also Florida and Georgia. We are literally the same age, like 2 or 3 months apart. And the differences could not be more stark. I was raised in a union household by a father who was alive on this earth when it was a violation of company policy for a family to have other friends over for Sunday dinner because they lived in company housing and the company said that that was a union organizing meeting. And they would be thrown out of their company houses for organizing a union and put out on the streets. My father was alive at a time when his father was not paid for his labor in American money. He was paid in company scrip that could only be spent at the company store to buy goods at extremely inflated prices. And again, if they were caught shopping at a non-company store, they would be fired. And again, the entire family thrown out on the street. In short,
my soul to the company store line?
Right. And so, in short, I was raised in a union household by Democrats. Joe was raised in an anti-union household by Republicans. He's bragged about how his daddy continued to defend Richard Nixon unto the very bitter end. My father knew what a shitbird Richard Nixon was from the minute he first heard Harry S. Truman refer to him as Richard Milhouse Pinhead Nixon. And so he has no sympathy. I mean, again, credit where it's due. He has at least made some mouth noises at how utterly corrupt and dirty the Netanyahu government is, but it extends past being dirty and corrupt. They are openly and actively fascist. And so we've got another follow-up story. And Jesus, this is gross. The United States, our partner in peace, Israel, as Mika pronounces it, has informed the United States that if the International Criminal Court issues arrest warrants for any of the fascist thugs in the Israeli government, that they, the Israeli government, will take it out on the Palestinian Authority. Because they claim that it's the Palestinian Authority lobbying the court for the arrest warrants. I'm pretty sure the court is not that corrupt. I'm pretty sure if arrest warrants for war crimes and crimes against humanity issue, that it will be because there is compelling evidence
to the same.
And we're talking about ICC arrest warrants for Psycho Bibi and Defense Minister Yoav Gallant and Israel and IDF Chief Herzi Halevi. And see, the ICC has been investigating this dirty fascist government since 2021. But they've also been investigating the Palestinians as well, going all the way back to the 2014 Israel-Hamas war. And they expanded the investigation to include both the October 7th attacks and the wholesale slaughter of innocents in Gaza. And so what Israel says they're going to do is that they're going to steal the Palestinian Authority's money, which will cause the Palestinian Authority, who is not Hamas, by the way, if I even have to say that. They're going to steal the Palestinian Authority's money because Israel will not let the Palestinian Authority collect the Palestinian Authority's own taxes. They collect the money for the Palestinian Authority and then transfer it to the Palestinian Authority for, I'm sure, a small fee. Yeah, kind of like right. When you pay your bill with a credit card.
Ooh, that guy's, you know, that's a whole nother conversation about junk fees. I love it. They call it a convenience fee. Like when I go to USC to go to the dentist, right? The only way you could pay for parking is with a credit card, right? And then they have this audacity to charge a convenience fee. And I'm like, well, I said, this is a convenient for me. I don't choose to use a credit card. And even if I do choose the credit card, the fact that you're going to charge me.
No, it's the convenience of the grifty assholes who get to not have to hire a human being to stand in the booth and take money.
Right. Right. Oh, as a matter of fact, speaking of that, one of the city council people, the person, Heather Hutt, the one who was appointed after Mark Ridley Thomas was indicted, and then she actually was elected in this last, no, I lied. She's in the runoff in November. But she has introduced legislation here in the city of Los Angeles that you cannot do business in LA without taking cash. Because did you know that over almost 40 some odd percent of the population of Los Angeles is Hispanic? And of that population, I forget the percentage that is immigrant, that are immigrants. And there's so many people who are unbanked or underbanked. They don't have access to debit cards. Especially going back to DV survivors, they can't use credit cards because credit cards can be tracked. So they have to use cash. So there are a lot of stores. And I know a lot of them was they because of COVID, they stopped taking cash because everyone touched off and, you know, spreading germs and shit like that. Those motherfuckers, y'all were wearing gloves and wearing masks. Anywho, now there's like chains of stores that do not take cash. The concert venues, they don't take cash.
No. You know, it's funny. You will never learn this, or never need to know this. But when entering the West Virginia Turnpike and approaching the toll booth, you are met with a sign that says, "Credit cards not accepted." You can either use cash, or you can use an Easy Pass. And here in fairly short order, they're going to eliminate the cash part so that they can get rid of all the state employees,
all the people
who have jobs and feed their families
You know what, Tracy? I could not stand in one of those booths for 8 hours.
Mm-mm.
I would go stark raving, running into the night, eating dirt and running rabbits cray-cray.
Just the smell of the exhaust alone. You cannot tell me that that is not detrimental to somebody's health. Oh, speaking of lying, about the who wrote it is saying that the oil companies are the new tobacco companies, and the disinformation campaign that have been going on for literally for decades. So there's a commercial I haven't seen in a minute. So there's so picture this. So there's a couple, mommy and daddy, and mommy's on they're on their way to the hospital because mommy's in labor, right? And they come in and roll the film and they walk in and the guy's like, well, this is what happens if to hospital, if we no longer use oil and gas products or what have you. And they showed all the machines that wouldn't work and all this because, you know, in hospitals, that's what keeps, you know, oil and gas is what keeps hospitals moving.
Sure.
And because I know you, and because I have been listening to your show for over 10 years, I no longer fall for the okie doke. I never forget when
that makes me feel so
the first
good.
Time I, you know, when we were talking something about coal, and I said, and there's no such thing as clean coal. And I thought you were going to tear up a little.
I think I probably did.
Because I'm like, and you know where I learned that from? I learned that from you, sis. Because had I never listened to this show, I would have been one of those people. And I don't even like calling people sheeple. I mean, some things maybe. But when it comes to propaganda and how well funded and market driven, I mean, I know they have, you know, they probably do market research on people and ask them, you know, how does this sound and what is, they know how to, and who's going to question? Obviously, of course, they're like, oil and gas is wonderful. Oh my God, what happens if mommy and daddy goes to the hospital and they can't, and we don't use oil and gas products anymore? Then how are the babies going to be born and how are people going to be taken care of? It's some sick shit.
Yeah, it is.
It is just, It is disinformation leading to misinformation. That's another thing I learned in college when I first went back. And one of the things, the difference, because I was one of those people that would say, oh, that's just misinformation. And my teacher corrected me and she's like, okay, there's misinformation, but then there's disinformation. And disinformation obviously is not obviously, but it's when information is put out there to deliberately misinform people to just lie. And misinformation basically is like, you know, there's no intent behind misinformation, depending on who you're talking to. But disinformation, it is definitely, there's an intent about giving out wrong information. I'm asking you, you know, Robin, the queen of word knowing and shit like that there.
You got it.
Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. I like to say, oh, God, did I lose her? But I miss the days, you know, hearkening back to what you were saying about union jobs. You know, if it wasn't for union jobs, there would be no black middle class.
I think that's a fair assessment.
There would be no black middle class. There would not be. Now there's really no black middle class, but the formation of a strong black middle class is directly a direct correlation. And I was the cause of a black middle class. Okay, and so I go back to my grandfather on my dad's side. He was a union butcher, and it afforded him, you know, made a very good living. My grandmother was also a union employee. She was a bus driver for, at the time, Rapid Transit RTD, is now MTA. And then she became a school cafeteria worker. So my grandparents, with my dad and his two younger sisters, used to go every year to visit their family. They used to be able to go on vacation and stuff like that there. And they had time, especially, you know, in the 50s and the 60s, like a whole lot of Americans who had well-paying union jobs, to pay attention to what was going on. And so, you know, during the civil rights movement, when they're watching these young black folks being hosed down, and which was definitely, you know, peaceful demonstrations, nonviolent, and they got to see what was going on in the South, that sparked action. When they saw young men, you know, bodies coming home during the Vietnam War covered with caskets, because the Vietnam War was the first televised war, yes?
The Living Room War.
The Living Room War. So people were, but people had it, because they had an 8-hour workday, sis. They had weekends off, or at least 2 days off. They were paid. They didn't have to work 3 or 4 jobs just to cobble together one. They had protection. They could organize. It was just, and so now when I see these young people who are saying, you fuck what y'all talking about, we need to, you know, do something about what's going on in Palestine and the wholesale genocide of a group of people, they need action. Now, is anybody going to the demand?
And just in case people don't know, the whole reason that these entire phalanges of cops rolled into UCLA, and like you said, it started out with the campus cops, and they weren't up to the task, and so then it was the California Highway Patrol, and then I guess what, the LACSD?
LAPD, it was Highway Patrol, because UCLA is University of California, Los Angeles, so it is a state school.
Right, sure.
And the state police agency is the Highway Patrol. So they were called in, and then I don't know what the order was, if it was LAPD and then the Sheriff's Department, or Sheriff's Department and then LAPD. But suffice to say, the young folks and their allies who were arrested, and at last count this morning, it was over 200 people arrested. They were carried away. They were transported in Sheriff's Department.
Whatever the order was, when I started seeing it this morning, I was like, wow. I mean, you know, were there brawls or something? No. It was over spray painted graffiti and some barricades.
And some barricades. Now, like,
which may or may not have been erected or performed by legitimate student protesters.
Right.
But I gotta say this when I hear. And I'm sorry all my references are to my filthy morning habit, but that's where I saw this morning. When I hear, and by way of damning these young protesters, Grandpa Joe
Ooh.
Was talking to Reverend Al and said,
uh-oh.
You went down and protested at Vieques, you know, the island off of Puerto Rico where the Navy was bombing, doing bombing runs and bombing training, and it was a horrible injustice. Yeah, you went down there and you got you got put in jail for your civil disobedience. And he said, that's right. I did 90 days in jail. And I knew I was going to do 90 days in jail. And then I can't remember if it was Joe or Mika who chimed in and said, and you weren't standing there saying, I want my meal plan. You know, just the outright mockery of young people who very likely may and probably are acting out of conscience.
Because
what is being done to innocent people in Gaza is literally unconscionable.
Right. It is literally the definition of crimes against humanity.
The mockery was just disgusting.
The condescension. Well, it wasn't any better down out here on saying this. It got to the point since I just had to turn it off because, like, they were interviewing, like, the main reporters that had been out there on the scene since jump. He was going on and on. When he would finally talk to a student that would talk to them, respond to questions. The main question was, aren't you worried about your future and, you know, the fact that this could be on your record? I mean, your permit. I want to say, why don't you just go ahead and say your permanent record? Go ahead. And what happens if you might get, you know, aren't you worried about not being able to graduate? And this one young lady, she was so good. She's like, well, I really don't want to live in a world where genocide is normalized. And if me not being able to get my if me not being able to get my degree is a result, that's the least that I can do. Because basically her point was, because even, you know, if I go to jail or if they don't give me, and she said it would be really ridiculous for them not to give me my degree when I'm 6 weeks away from graduation. But she's like, but if that, so be it. And then she, her next response was, and I wouldn't want to work for a company that would have a problem.
Nope, somebody's beeping Tracy, I think. Oh, and this coming from Steve in New York, I think you'll like this or be flabbergasted by this. A paragraph from the BBC over the UCLA protests. I mean, and this, again, this is the BBC writing. The BBC can be problematic. God knows. But still, as police breached the perimeter, you know, what, Charlie was in the wire? As police breached the perimeter, some demonstrators could be seen locking arms and using their plywood barriers as makeshift shields, while others donned hard hats, and God, is this verb doing a fucking load of work, seemed to arm themselves with umbrellas. And Steve asks, umbrellas? Arming themselves with umbrellas? What the ever-living hell is this? Well, I don't know. Maybe they were umbrellas from Vladimir Putin.
Taking a break.
It's astonishing. Armed with umbrellas.
Well, it's like you said about the...
is this where I queue like up, it never rains in Southern California?
It never rains. That's what, we got to use the umbrellas for something.
Y'all even got umbrellas?
Shut up. You know, we actually have rainstorms, so we had to buy umbrellas. So shut up.
Okay. Well, and everybody forgets the next line from that song. It never rains in Southern California, but man, it pours. Man, it pours. But umbrellas? I mean, that's a Monty Python skit, Tracy.
Well, no.
What do you do when he comes at you? What are you going to do when an attacker comes at you with a banana?
But what about, like you were saying, about when, you know, the Palestinians were defending themselves against the Israeli army and, you know, with rocks and what else? Sticks or what have you? But the Israeli army was scared for their lives.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that white woman police officer in Tulsa who was 30 feet away from the brother that she wasted and said, "I was in fear for my life." Because, you know, a terrified black guy at a traffic stop, much like an alligator, can cover a lot of ground surprisingly quickly. Am I aching back? But I was particularly disgusted this morning with Reverend Al. I mean, Joe, I just accept that shit. But it's like, wow, the check cleared, Reverend Al, didn't it?
I stayed in jail for 90 days.
And then Joe said, and you came out a lot thinner too. Well groomed. You remember how his hair used to be? He's well groomed now, Tracy.
Well, don't forget, you know, he's clean and articulate and well groomed. And he's clean too.
Mm-hmm.
All these people. Well, I only thing I can say is that as far as the reactionary politics of you know, USC, UCLA was fine at first, but then they lost their losers. And literally the whole day on the whole news cycle was about UCLA. Yes, all day today. And like I said, I just got to the point I couldn't deal with it anymore. I'm like, okay, I'm done talking. I mean, I'm done listening. I'm proud of these kids. But unfortunately, you know, and then did you hear what our president said, his response?
Yeah, there are better responses to be had, but, and I know, I'm a neoliberal establishment shill, right?
Right.
But, I mean, he had a press conference today, and he denounced the violent protests. Was he lumping all the protests as being violent? And he said there's no place for anti-Semitism. Okay, I'm down with that.
Okay. But did he actually say anything about, because I was listening really, you know, I was listening really hard. He mentioned hate speech, right? Or did he directly mention hate speech against Palestinians?
Yes. There should be no place there should be no place on any campus, no place in America for anti-Semitism or threats of violence against Jewish students. There is no place for hate speech or violence of any kind, whether it's anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, or discrimination against Arab Americans or Palestinian Americans. It's simply wrong. There's no place for racism in America. It's all wrong. It's un-American. Violent protest is not protected. Peaceful protest is.
Okay.
But that story I read earlier about our partners in peace, Israel, warning the U.S. that it would steal the Palestinian Authority's money.
Right.
The U.S. said the story noted that the United States does not support arrest warrants being issued by the International Criminal Court. Why would we not support arrest warrants? Well, I mean, we don't subscribe to the International Criminal Court. We don't submit to their jurisdiction. But by the same token, why would we not support arrest warrants for criminals? I mean, because I'm flabbergasted by the shit that I have learned just by going and reading sources inside Israel about the, I mean, the only thing about this Ben-Gavir and Halevi and Smotrich that isn't a Nazi is the fact that they don't have the spiffy Hugo Boss uniforms. That's it. They are fascists through and through and through. I mean, the Ben-Gavir asshole is on record as having talked about wanting an Israel that runs from the river to the sea, but the river is the Euphrates.
That part.
You think the Syrians and the Iraqis might have a say about that? Not that I'm fans of either Bashar al-Assad or whoever's running Iraq that just made it a decades-long criminal offense to be gay? Fuck those people. But then again, there is, you know, the law of unintended consequences is a law for a reason, Tracy. Because as awful, okay, we got two examples from the region. As awful, and he was as awful as Saddam Hussein was, there was a secular society there. There was an unmolested Christian community that was among the oldest on earth. It's barely there now because of the war that we started against them. In Iran, women were doctors, pharmacists, engineers, accountants, lawyers. And they didn't have to walk around in goddamn beekeeper suits. But Reza Pahlavi sitting on his peacock throne as the Shah was such a nasty right-wing shitheel that he made his own people despise him and want him dead and be willing to bring back a man who was in exile whose name was Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini. We know in this country so little about other countries. At the time of the Iranian Revolution in 1979, there were people who supported that revolution thinking that that revolution was finally going to bring democracy back that the United States had overturned in 1952. When they had a democratically elected prime minister named Mohammad Mossadegh. And by the way, not to put too fine a point on it, the Iranians, 99.9% of Americans don't know. They white folks.
Right.
They're not Arabs. They're not brown.
Mm-mm.
They are the original Aryans, for God's sakes.
Original.
The OG. Some went down into India. Some went southwest into what is Persia. But in both cases, there were secular societies which we ourselves upended and made enemies of over the political desires of authoritarian governments, our own.
That part.
Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford were perfectly happy to let the Shah's bloodthirsty Savak run around and just disappear people in the middle of the night in Iran. And remember the picture of Donald Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein and grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush? You remember that?
Out of a wire brush? Oh, yeah. See, we're old enough to... There's a really great meme referring to Gen X's, and I will call you... I know you were born before Gen X, but you're not a boomer. And one of the things was, you know,
just look, you know, with the meme of a person rolling their eyes to the back of their head when somebody that was born in the 80s or the 90s is talking about history and getting it all wrong to people who were actually there or was part of their lived experience. And it's like the shit that people get wrong, and you're just like, oh.
So the Likud party in Israel is and always has been a fascist movement. And they were born in 1977. And Stephen New York just went and looked up their founding platform. Check this out. The right of the Jewish people to the land of Israel is eternal and indisputable. Therefore, Judea and Samaria will not be handed to any foreign administration. Between the sea and the Jordan River, there will only be Israeli sovereignty. And Steve points out, this sounds an awful lot like from the river to the sea to me, especially that final clause, or am I just being stupid? Steve, please, you're not stupid. From the river to the sea is okay for me, but from the river to the sea is not okay for thee.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt it's complicated. God alone knows it's bloody and terrifying and horrifying. But just because something, you know, I think back to Kennedy talking about going to the moon. We choose to go to the moon not because it is easy, but because it is hard. We do hard things.
All the time.
We have NATO because we got into two world wars that cost ungodly amounts of American blood and treasure. And we recognize that for 2,000 years, Europe had been an abattoir. And we tried to stop it. And we did a pretty damn good job for a while. We brokered a peace between Ireland and Northern Ireland. We brokered a peace between Israel and Egypt. Even the Jordanians, when the Iranian attacks took place a couple of weeks ago, the Jordanians were shooting down Iranian crap. And that was our doing.
That part.
But if we tell the Israelis, stop slaughtering tens of thousands of innocent women and children, the Israelis look at us, give us the middle goddamn finger, and say, you're not the boss of me. And I fucking hate it. I hate having our country, even though it be flawed, I hate having our country abase itself before a pissant fascist government. I hate having our country humiliated by a country that if there were not religious fetishes surrounding it, would occupy our consciousness no more often than does Suriname. Am I wrong?
Nope. That part.
But, you know, I'm a bitch. I'm a bitch. Tracy, I got to roll here, but thank you for the conversation. It has been wonderful.
It's been wonderful.
I'm sorry if I got worked up.
No, we need more people worked up in a good way. That's it. That is all we care. That is all we ask for. Well, with that said, I love you more than I love my luggage.
Oh, I got a quick follow-up because it's these little nuggets that are so beautiful. Brother Deacon Asa just told me the last name of that one fascist, Ben Gavir.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Ben-Gavir means son of wealth.
Asa, well, yes, there's a lot.
Asa adds, LOL. Oh, the goddess. Yeah.
Before I go, just so I'm looking, you know, like I said, I'm trying to find organizations that we could partner with. So there's a group that I just found called Catalyst California. And they just released a press release, Los Angeles, in response to the violent attacks on and repression of pro-Palestinian protests at UCLA and campuses across California. Catalyst California President and CEO John Kim delivered the following statement. California's history as the birthplace of the free speech movement is not just a point of nostalgia, but a promise to this nation and the hope for a healthier, multiracial democracy. Too many campus leaders have forgotten that the fundamental right for peaceful protest is as important a lesson to pass down to the next generation as history, math, or science. At UCLA specifically, the vast majority of the pro-Palestinian protesters were nonviolent in intent, and in the face of brutal attacks by criminals, attacking them with rubber bullets and mass arrests less than a day after allowing violent agitators to depart without consequences, sends a terrible message and echoes the similar suppression of protests at Cal Poly, Humboldt, and USC's cancellation of a valedictorian speech because of her activism. Whether the speech is permitted and whether the violence is suppressed cannot depend on viewpoint. We call on LA's leaders to aggressively process the violent perpetrators from Tuesday night's attack. We call on campus officials to immediately find ways to support those from the encampment, and we call on the leaders of the UCs and public and private universities across the state to ensure students' ongoing safety and their right to be heard. California advocates for racial justice by building power and transforming public systems. We partner with communities of color, conduct innovative research, develop policy for actionable change, and shift money and power back to our communities. Mm-hmm.
Where's the radicalism in that?
Well, remember,
I hear any.
Well, you know, and that just reminds me, I know you got to go, but remember, the Black Studies movement started at San Francisco State University.
Ta-da.
They were the first, educational opportunity program started in California, Cal State.
I'm going to throw one more thing out there, and then we're going to boogie.
Okay.
This is when you know that something's getting legs. I just now got a story. Several dozen students at the University of Alabama gathered today. Calling themselves Tide Against Genocide. Got to work the tide in there. Roll Tide, y'all. I'm tuning in the morning, and Jehoshaphat's going to he's going to be having kittens with crocheted tails. And maggots showed up in opposition carrying American flags in Alabama, no less. And singing the national anthem. And then this, from Steve, peace between Israel and Egypt, that was Anwar Sadat and Menachem Begin and Jimmy Carter brokering that peace. Carter got the Nobel Peace Prize for it. Begin and Sadat did too. Steve says, get this, I looked it up. Begin was the fucking founder of the Likud party. Don't fucking tell me we can't do a peace. Yeah, we can, but we have to have the will to use the stick when the carrot is no longer effective. And by the way, by the way, Menachem Begin was also a member of, I don't know why I can't remember the terrorist group's name, but he was a pro-Israeli nation statehood terrorist and was actively involved in the bombing of the King David Hotel in Jerusalem in the 1940s.
Wow.
And they didn't try to hide it. He was a terrorist on the same level as Hamas, as Yasser Arafat. But he gets a pass.
And
wonder
yet.
Why.
One,
I mean, look when you get a minute, look up the bombing of the King David Hotel. There are no clean hands in this. All the hands are covered in blood.
So what were you saying? Did you say that this morning?
Itzhak Rabin, who was shortly before his assassination was threatened by a young what's-his-fuck Ben-Gavir, whose parents, by the way, were secular Jews from Syria, or perhaps Iraq, and they emigrated to Israel. They were secular Jews. They weren't, you know, they weren't wearing headgear or anything like that. They just happened to be Jews. And their kid got sucked into a right-wing hate movement. But I don't know where I was going. Menachem Begin was no different than that shitbird.
Right.
Oh, Itzhak Rabin. A young Ben-Gavir threatened Itzhak Rabin shortly before the assassination, and Rabin had made a brilliant statement. He said, "The history of humanity is written in blood, and we must learn to write in another color." Oh, and by the way, the terrorist group that Menachem Begin was part of was the Irgun.
Yeah, I was looking.
At any rate,
yeah, the history of humanity is a book written in blood. There it is.
Yeah. I gotta roll.
You have a wonderful day.
I'm gonna try real hard, and you be safe going home if you're not there already.
I'm actually at home, sir. That's why you didn't hear any humming and static and stuff like that.
Ah, no automotive gizmos.
No, I'm at home.
Had a girl. Well, you be safe out there.
I have my moment.
You be safe out there on the mean streets of Los Angeles in the morning.
Los Angeles.
And I will.
I'll keep
you posted on the latest conniption from Grandpa Joe.
Please do. I look for that.
Love you, sis. Later.
Love you too. Bye.
Bye. And so that's the program. Let's see. Tomorrow we will be at $7.95 for fundraising for Friday on the Front Porch. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our challenge makers, our challenge respondents, our a la carte contributors. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Some real gems and pearls this evening, even the ones I didn't read out loud. Remember, please, if you're listening to the podcast, please like every episode on whatever platform you're listening. Subscribe to a couple of different platforms so you won't miss any shows. Leave a comment here and there. Write a review if you want to. It helps other people see that they might like to be part of this community, too. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. You now have 29 days. If there's anything you want at WhiteRoseSociety.org, you have 29 days in which to download anything you want at White Rose. There's never a bill. But White Rose will go dark on June the 1st. June the 1st. And thank you, Ben, for all you've done to save progressive radio on the Internet. Generally, save progressive radio. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 25 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Find out when your next booster is. Wear your mask if you're around the maggots, because, well, a maggot is a great place to catch the Rona. Wash your hands, don't touch your face. Carry your hand sanitizer with you and use it. Pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance as best you can. Oh, and by the way, if Christy the Gnome comes your way, maybe we'll get to this tomorrow, declaring that the words she wrote about slaughtering a puppy are fake news, well, avoid Christy the Gnome like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Gina and Wayne, it's all for you. Later.